Welcome back to Music for Life, exploring the purpose and value of music to humanity's enrichment. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. Today's episode is titled Music for Nationalism, and we are exploring how nationalism and patriotism have affected fine art music history. In the first half, we saw how contrasts in national styles started forming back in the Baroque era as the concept of a nation-state was becoming more prominent in the Western world. And then we saw how nationalism in music really took off in the 19th century with composers like Chopin, Verdi, and a quintet of Russian composers known as the Mighty Five or the Mighty Handful. This idea that music should sound distinct to a nation became stronger in what we term late Romanticism, and it continued well into the 20th century, a time period sometimes referred to as the modern era. One early modern movement specific to one country was occurring in the early 20th century. It actually began toward the end of the 19th century and was really considered its own era or mini-era of sorts. It occurred in France, and it was an attempt by French composers to make their music sound distinctly French. My music history teacher in college, Dr. Michael Buds, would always talk about it this way. He'd say that each country in Europe was like a swimming pool, and every time a composer came along, that composer would jump in his nation's pool, and some would make bigger splashes than others. When Wagner jumped into Germany's pool, his splash went into every other pool in Europe. But then, he said, you had all the self-righteous French trying to scoop Wagner's water out of their pool. And you had to see him mime that in class. That's a good description of this movement in France at the end of the 19th century into the early 20th century. The music was quite distinct from late German Romanticism. It was a reaction to it, in fact. And it became known as French Impressionism. The term Impressionism was first a term applied in a derogatory way to a group of avant-garde painters. This movement had parallels in literature with the Symbolist poets and in music with the works mainly of Claude Debussy and Maurice Ravel. Melody was less sweeping, not as long of phrases, favoring more short motives. Harmony had less of a tonal feel, less of a pull to the tonic key. Chord progression wasn't as important. Different kinds of scales were used. Rhythm was usually freer, with more syncopation or irregular subdivisions of the measures to hide a distinct meter. This is evident in the utterly famous example, Clair de Lune, by Claude Debussy. When it came to medium, the instruments making the music, composers shied away from brassy, piercing, and percussive sounds in general, and they favored the somber lower registers of the flute and clarinet, the sounds of muted horns and trumpets, and the mellow sounds of the English horn and the harp. Here is a representative example of a piano piece from French Impressionism. This is Je ne peux dire No. 1 by the French composer Eric Satie. Here it is performed by French pianist Pascal Roget. That was pianist Pascal Roget performing Eric Satie's Je ne peux dire No. 1, and it was a classic example of French-sounding music from the period known as Impressionism, a distinctly French movement in music history. This occurred in France at the end of the 19th century into the early 20th century. The style period favored the mellow colors of certain instruments, plus some usages of melody and harmony that were unique to this period and nation. We're going to hear another quintessential example of Impressionism in a piano piece by Claude Debussy. Not only does it employ many of the techniques of Impressionism, this French style, it also evokes images of another nationality or region of the world. See, the Impressionists often drew from Asian influences. So here is a piece titled Pagoda by Claude Debussy. And as mentioned earlier, composers didn't make music sound distinctly like another country simply from borrowing a folk tune from that country. Sometimes they would use more subtle compositional devices that were similar to those used in the country whose musical style they wanted to emulate. To make a piece sound like it's from East Asia, a composer could structure much of the melodic material based on a pentatonic or five-note scale, or the composer could employ a harmonic device known as parallel fifths, which refer to the motion of a particular kind of harmony. Debussy employs both these techniques here to make his music sound Asian. So it's an example of French nationalism, but one that also inspires thoughts of the Orient.
Thank you.
That was Claude Debussy's Pagoda, performed by Jean-Bernard Pommier, and it was a classic example of Impressionism, a distinctly French movement in music history, and in that case, Debussy was not only espousing this uniquely French style, he was also making use of elements of Asian music, like the pentatonic scale and a harmonic device known as parallel fifths. He did this to evoke images of the Orient, and even named this movement after the East Asian structure known as the Pagoda. Many composers of the 20th century were drawing on elements of musical devices unique to their own nations to make their music sound distinctly like the countries they were from, or to make the music sound like another country if that's what they wanted to evoke images of. Again, one technique that allowed this was using folk songs from the region or country they were honoring in their music. And a big proponent of this, as we discussed in a previous episode on the folk element in fine art music, was Béla Bartók. Bartók is considered one of the most important composers of the 20th century, and he made extensive use of folk tunes in his music. He not only composed by incorporating folk themes and styles into his music, part of his life's work was collecting and notating folk music from various Eastern European cultures, along with another composer, Zoltán Kodály, who we've mentioned before and will mention again today in our Classroom Corner segment. You can hear this all over so many of Bartók's works, and I gave him a fair bit of time in that folk element episode. So let's talk about another composer of the 20th century who was trying to draw on national heritage to make his music sound distinctly like his country. His name was Aaron Copland. There are two main reasons Copland tried to make his music sound distinctly American. One was because he was trying to prove his patriotism amid a time when he was being looked on as a Russian sympathizer, given that his parents were immigrants from that area. But earlier in his life, he had also been encouraged to write distinctly American-sounding music from his composition teacher in Paris, Nadia Boulanger. Copland wasn't the first to try his hand at an American sound. A Czech composer by the name of Antonín Dvořák tried his hand at it after visiting the New World. His famous Symphony No. 9, nicknamed From the New World, drew from Native American and African American folk styles to evoke sounds of a music distinct from Europe. Before that time, an American bandleader by the name of John Philip Sousa was trying to elevate the output of the U.S. military bands. This was the mid to late 19th century. His music has a particularly American sound, and we'll get to him a little bit later. But Copland was arguably the first American-born fine art composer, you could say, to espouse this American-sounding concert music. While in France, when Boulanger was encouraging him to find a distinctly American style, Copland looked back across the Atlantic, figuratively, at some of the jazz elements developing in American music. His attempts to fuse that style with his concert music weren't as successful as when he later tried to incorporate American folk music into his concert music. We heard an example of that in episode 12 when I played a portion of Copland's Lincoln Portrait. The purpose of my playing this piece in that previous episode was to show how Copland drew from two major folk tunes that would have been famous in Lincoln's day, and how he weaved those throughout the piece. I played the opening 5.5 minutes, which was just an instrumental introduction that introduced both of those themes, and then I played about 1.5 minutes of the portion that followed, which includes a spoken narrator quoting famous sections of Abraham Lincoln's most noteworthy speeches. So consider how by not only choosing American folk tunes in this work, but an American president as its theme, arguably the most American of presidents because of his efforts to preserve national unity, Copland was writing a heavily American composition, a piece of music that employs the spirit of nationalism. This became important for Aaron Copland to do, as we said, as he would use this method of composition to prove his patriotism and loyalty to America as the Red Scare started to spread throughout the country. Since we only heard a portion of the narration section on a previous episode, let's begin this example where the narration comes in. This is Gerard Schwartz conducting the Seattle Symphony Orchestra with James Earl Jones narrating, who I know will always be Darth Vader to some of you. But listen for how Copland captures the American spirit in this work, both in the subject matter, the great quotes from Mr. Lincoln that Copland chose himself, and the American folk music that Copland weaves throughout.
Fellow citizens, we cannot escape history. That is what he said. That is what Abraham Lincoln said. Fellow citizens, we cannot escape history. We of this Congress and this administration will be remembered in spite of ourselves. No personal significance or insignificance can spare one or another of us. The fiery trial through which we pass will light us down in honor or dishonor to the latest generation. Even we here hold the power and bear the responsibility. He was born in Kentucky, raised in Indiana, and lived in Illinois. And this is what he said. This is what Abe Lincoln said. The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew. We must disenthrall ourselves, and then we shall save our country. Standing erect, he was 6 feet 4 inches tall. And this is what he said. He said, "It is the eternal struggle between two principles, right and wrong, throughout the world. It is the same spirit that says, you toil and work and earn bread, and I'll eat it, no matter in what shape it comes. Whether from the mouth of a king who seeks to bestride the people of his own nation and live by the fruit of their labor, or from one race of men as an apology for enslaving another race, it is the same tyrannical principle." Lincoln was a quiet man. Abe Lincoln was a quiet and a melancholy man. But when he spoke of democracy, this is what he said. He said, "As I would not be a slave, so I would not be a master." This expresses my idea of democracy. Whatever differs from this, to the extent of the difference, is no democracy. Abraham Lincoln, 16th President of these United States, is everlasting in the memory of his countrymen. For on the battleground at Gettysburg, this is what he said. He said that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, and that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth.
You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today's episode is titled Music for Nationalism, and we are exploring how nationalism and patriotism have affected fine art music history. That was narrator James Earl Jones with the Seattle Symphony and conductor Gerard Schwartz in a recording of Aaron Copland's Lincoln Portrait. That was an example of American nationalism finding its way into a musical composition. Aaron Copland chose American folk tunes to incorporate in that piece to give it an American sound, and tunes that Lincoln likely would have been familiar with. He also chose the Lincoln quotes himself. Notice what Aaron Copland said about this piece of music. This is what he said. He said, "In the opening section, I wanted to suggest something of the mysterious sense of fatality that surrounds Lincoln's personality. Also near the end of that section, something of his gentleness and simplicity of spirit. The quick middle section briefly sketches in the background of the times he lived. This merges into the concluding section where my sole purpose was to draw a simple but impressive frame about the words of Lincoln himself." That concluding section, with the quotes of Lincoln, comprises over half of this work, which is the section we just focused on in that excerpt. We study this particular composition every year in our elementary music class here at Imperial Academy of Edmond, which is based on this campus here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. To talk about that, let's get into our Classroom Corner segment, where we explore different methods and curricula for introducing young people to music. Each February, here at Imperial Academy, we dub Aaron Copland the Composer of the Month as part of integrating the music curriculum with the general classroom curriculum in the lead-up to President's Day. We talk about Aaron Copland's efforts to write American-sounding and even patriotic music. We learn America the Beautiful and the Star-Spangled Banner as examples of patriotic American songs, and we also learn the two folk songs that Copland uses in his work, Lincoln Portrait, so they can identify those tunes when we play Lincoln Portrait for them. A coloring book we've produced goes along with the listening experience as well, helping them to see those tunes notated and understand how Aaron Copland was honoring this American president in his composition. This idea of drawing on patriotic music and nationalistic music is not unique to our school. It's a common part of a famous method of learning music. We discussed this method of music education in an earlier episode. That is, the Kodály method, established by Hungarian composer Zoltán Kodály. The Kodály method, in addition to establishing those hand signs for the solfège syllables we talked about in another episode, incorporates patriotic and nationalistic music in its method. Kodály collaborated with Béla Bartók, collecting folk tunes from Hungary, Romania, and other parts of southeastern Europe. He included folk and folk-like melodies in his best-known orchestral works, but he also incorporated folk tunes as a means of teaching young people important musical concepts, developing good musicianship, and instilling a respect for their own cultural heritage. Kodály believed that this music not only would help students develop a keen sense of their own culture, but also the cultures of other countries. According to proponents of the Kodály method, nationalistic music from all over helps teach students about different music styles, and as a result, they are able to more easily develop their own style of musical expression. This would allow them to relate their musical experiences to more than just music, but to history, society, and culture. Now, using music of one's own country, what we call patriotic music, using that in the classroom can help instill characteristics like good citizenship and respect for one's own country and community. Of course, if the teacher fully understands the meaning behind the patriotic songs before teaching them, this allows the students to understand the rich national history that accompanies such songs. This educates the students in musical and non-musical ways, but it also can increase their enjoyment in singing these songs. For example, we do this here at Imperial Academy when teaching patriotic songs like the United States National Anthem. There is quite a history connected to how Francis Scott Key was inspired to write those lyrics, and each year here at Imperial Academy, we go over that stirring and sobering history. This gives the students a historical context for the music and hopefully increases their appreciation for their own national anthem and their own nation's music in general. This has been Classroom Corner. You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today's episode, Music for Nationalism, is exploring how nationalism and patriotism have affected fine art music history. Now let's have our backstage banter segment where we interview performers on the concert circuit today for their perspectives on music. Today, we interview a musician who is considered an ambassador for the music of his native country, and this is more in the folk tradition. Recently, the Grammy-winning Mariachi Los Camperos performed here at Armstrong Auditorium. The day of their performance, I sat down with the group's musical director, Jesus Guzman, or Chuy, and we talked about his musical background, the founder of his group, Nati Cano, and how they strive to represent this art form of Mexico, both through performances and through educating the next generation. What is it about your group that is set apart from other mariachi groups? What makes Mariachi Los Camperos so wonderful?
Bueno, primeramente,
la unidad del Mariachi Los Camperos. Unity in the Mariachi Los Camperos.
Una tradición.
It is
de respeto que dejó
tradition of high respect
el señor Nati Cano.
That Mr. Nati Cano left us.
Para él, la música.
For him, the music.
Siempre fue corazón.
It was
fue
always
respeto,
from the heart, from respect, decency.
Amor.
Love.
Fue un
it was
nacimiento
a
de traducción
birth of en translation
nuestra música hacia
of
el público.
Our music to
sí,
the public.
Entonces, el estilo del
therefore,
Los Camperos
the style of the Mariachi Los Camperos
distingue siempre
it gets,
de otros grupos.
It is distinguished from other groups.
En cómo, desde
on
que
how,
entramos a un escenario,
since we, from the
cómo,
time cómo we come on stage,
cómo nos posicionamos
how
en el
we approach the stage,
cómo desenvolvemos nuestra experiencia cada uno de los músicos
each one of the musicians,
y las dinámicas
show
que
our experience
dentro de
and all the
música.
Dynamism that we involve in our music
tanto tocando como cantando
not only playing but also singing.
Yo creo que
I think that
traemos un
we
un,
are bringing
un arreglo
an arrangement, a musical arrangement
para todos los
for
aspectos,
all the different
para,
aspects
para todo el público,
or tastes for all the
Mexicano
public,
como anglosajón,
not only Mexican, but American.
Pero que puede absorber la cultura
really
de México.
Show the Mexican culture.
Let's talk about you. You're a violin player, and you are the leader of the group. And I wanted to know if you could talk about your musical background, where you grew up, when you started taking music lessons.
Bueno,
okay.
Mi historia es
My story es grande. Is huge.
Sí. Empecé cuando yo
I
tenía seis
started
años.
When I was 6 years
Hace
old,
46, años.
46 years ago.
Mi padre, él era músico.
My dad
él
was a musician.
Violín,
he
trompeta.
Played violin and trumpet.
En, y yo recuerdo desde
and
que
I remember
músico,
since I was a child,
tres años,
3 years old
años.
Or four,
miraba un programa
I was watching a program
en mi ciudad natal, que es San Luis Río Colorado, Sonora.
In San Luis Río Colorado, Sonora. That's my hometown.
Y ese programa se llamaba
that program
Noches
was called
Tapatías.
Noches Tapatías. That's
el mariachi que
a mariachi that was there
era el mariachi Vargas.
Was Mariachi Vargas, which
mariachi del
was,
mundo.
The, you know, it is the best in the world.
Y ahí veía a todos
and there
los
I was
artistas,
watching and looking at all the singers
momento,
and all the actors, all these different names that we know. The,
y todos
and all the artists.
De, del
of
cine mexicano,
the Mexican movies
de oro de ese,
and all
ese,
the golden voices of esa, that time.
Y yo creo que mi,
so I think
la
that
the
passion for this music came
yo,
on to me.
Yo, cuando yo tenía seis
it,
años,
when I was
un día,
6 years old, one day I
un disco,
was listening to a recording. Took my father's violin,
obvious, no,
and
no, sabía
obviously
nada,
I didn't know anything, but I was really trying it.
Y mi padre dice, ah,
and my dad
a tocar
said,
violin?
Oh, you want to learn how to play
y
the violin?
Sí.
I said, yep.
Ahí empezó mi
so
carrera.
That was the beginning of my career.
De ahí hasta ahorita,
from
pues,
there
sí,
until now, I continue learning.
En la ciudad donde yo
in
empecé,
the city where I started,
la música,
the music, the teaching
era,
of the music
pobre, no, no,
was very
no
poor. There was not very many opportunity.
Mi enseñanza fueron los discos.
My teacher were the recordings.
Sí. Yo iba a la escuela en la mañana.
I used to go to school in the morning.
Y salía a mediodía.
And at noon I was done.
Y caminaba de la escuela a mi
and
casa
I would
más
walk
o menos como una milla.
Like a mile from school to
y
home.
Y en el transcurso
and
hacía mi
tarea. In that time that I was walking, I would do my homework.
Para llegar a mi casa a estudiar.
So that I could come home to yeah. study.
5 or 6 hours.
5 or 6 hours music.
Recámara,
in my bedroom, listening to records and you know, trying my hand.
Yeah, en Tijuana ya cuando ya tenía yo
and,
16
later on,
años.
When I was 16 and I was
de Tijuana, Baja California.
I was in Tijuana
empecé a estudiar
and I had a university there of music and that's where I started sí. formally.
Estudié por 3 años.
I studied for 3 years.
Y,
and
el movimiento del mariachi,
the mariachi movements
me trajo a Estados Unidos.
And all the situations brought me to the United States.
Seguí
and I
aquí
continued
con
studying
maestros.
Here with some teachers, and, other teachers.
Pues, ya en
1989,
tuve la oportunidad
I had the
de
opportunity to
los
start with the Mariachi Los Camperos.
And,
well, that's when it was under Nati Cano.
Uh-huh.
And so did you, is that the first time you met Nati Cano?
I met Nati Cano in Tijuana.
Okay.
I was working in a Mexican restaurant, very public restaurant.
Oh, famous restaurant.
Yes,
okay.
Mr. Cano, he went a lot of times, and I met him there. And I asked him, you know, do you think maybe someday I can be part of your group? Because what's my dream? I remember I was seven or eight years old. I heard the Mariachi Los Camperos record, and And I promised that my guitar player, we raised it together. And I told him, you know, someday I will be with Mariachi Los Camperos. I don't know when, but you know what? My dream came true. I never know that my position will be as a musical director.
Were you playing in the restaurant when he came to the restaurant and heard you?
He came to the restaurant to eat.
Right. And you were there playing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And then you told him this was your dream to be part of his group. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you said, to continue with your story, you said in 1989 you started with Mariachi Los Camperos. And talk about the journey from when you started to when you took over as leader.
Well, when I started with Mariachi Los Camperos, the director was Mr. Crescencio Hernandez, who is a great trumpet player. And we started to touring with Linda Rosten.
Mm-hmm.
And I lead in the to rehearse the guys. And Mr. Cano told me, you will be in charge of the mariachi when we are on tour.
So he put you in charge for the tour with mm-hmm. Linda Ronstadt as they toured around.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Crescencio, he left the mariachi, and I started to working more with the guys. And Mr. Cano told me, you know what? I think you have the capacity to lead the Mariachi Los Camperos. So I announced you as a musical director of Mariachi Los Camperos. And I worked very, very hard because it's my passion, it's my life, and I think I dedicate half of my life to Mariachi Los Camperos, and he believed in me. So before he died, he was announcing in the concert, you know. Later, when I died, Mr. Guzman, he will take the banner from Los Camperos. He called me 2 weeks before he died. And he told me, Chuy, I'm gone. I will die in a week or two weeks. And I want to know if you want to go ahead with Mariachi Los Camperos or what do you want to do? I told him, you're Mr. Cano. You worked very, very hard for Mariachi Los Camperos. So I think it's a waste to enterrarlos.
Bury them.
Yeah, to bury them. So if you believe in me, I will love to take the Camperos.
Right. And Nati Cano was a giant in terms of what he did for the music of the Mexican culture. We would call him a musical ambassador. Can you talk about how important he was, not just as a great musician, but as an ambassador for the music of Mexican culture?
Well, he believed in the future of the mariachi and the young people and the students. And he dedicated a lot of time for the children's education. He was very humanitarian man, but his priority always was the Mexican culture and the young people.
So he promoted it through his teaching
mm-hmm.
and also through his performing.
Yes.
So when you met him, you were still somewhat young. How much did he teach you as you were starting out in collaboration with him?
Oh, well, he never stopped. Él nunca, nunca paró.
He never stopped teaching.
Aún yo teniendo la dirección del mariachi.
Even when I had the mariachi's direction as a director,
siempre me decía,
he was always telling me,
Chuy, espérate.
Chuy, slow down.
Vamos. Decía, mira.
He says, look.
Vamos está bien lo que estás haciendo.
What you're doing is okay.
Pero, ¿qué te parece si hacemos esta dinámica?
What do you think if we add this little dynamism here and there?
And siempre su...
And,
su enseñanza
his
de él,
teaching was always,
él decía que lo que yo hacía even
though
perfecto,
he said that what I was doing was perfect, he was always joking around.
Siempre había algo que,
there was always something to correct and improve.
Sí. Y el, eso me ayudó a
so
mí
that
mucho.
Really helped
Tanto
me a lot.
Cantando,
not only singing,
tocando,
playing.
Él no, he, no, no le gustaba escribir.
He didn't like to write anything
él daba
down.
Ideas.
He was giving ideas.
Él decía, no, ¿sabes
he
que
would
yo
say,
no,
you know what?
Yo no sé escribir.
I don't know how to write this
pero
down.
Les puedo decir cómo
but
lo hagan.
I can tell you how to do it.
Y esa fue su pasión.
So that was his passion.
Su promoción con
his
toda
promotion
la gente,
with
con,
all people.
Con todos los estudiantes,
with all the students,
todo mundo lo adoraba.
Everybody loved him.
As director now, how do you take his style of leadership or his style of leading musically or even as an educator, and how do you follow in his footsteps?
Bueno,
he
puesto su,
I have
su,
put,
su
in,
vision.
Put into action his vision. And not only
en la escuela,
in the teaching,
como en el mariachi,
but also in the group itself, in the mariachi group,
y en enseñanza con,
and
con
also in the teaching to all the students.
Sigo, o trato
I
de seguir.
Continue. I try to continue
su
his
modelo de
model,
siendo
his example,
being humilde,
humble. Being
dando lo mejor que tengo,
giving the best of myself,
porque yo creo
because
que
I believe that the youth
va a tomar mi lugar.
You know, alguien, is going to take somebody a... from the youth is going to take my place one day.
Como uno ha sido discípulo de,
as I have been a disciple
personas,
of other people,
va
so somebody is going to be replacing me someday.
Y yo, la verdad,
and so
uno,
truly,
uno nunca sabe
nobody knows
la
when
medida que tiene uno
and how high
los,
one measures until one begins to listen.
Yeah. Yo lo escuché de mi propia familia, de
heard,
mis hijos.
Heard it from my own family, my sons, my children.
They los llevé a algunos conciertos.
I took them to some of the concerts.
And
they were telling me,
comentaron.
You know, just giving me feedback,
sí.
Making,
yo no sabía
says,
qué tan famoso eras.
Dad, I didn't know how famous you were.
Sí,
right.
Y, o sea, uno se,
so
se,
one is
se adentra tanto en,
going into
en,
so deep into
lo que uno está haciendo,
the what we're doing,
tanto educacionalmente como
not only
trabajando,
in teaching, but also in working and doing.
Que el tiempo pasa.
That the time flies.
Yeah. Pues se
and
hace
so
rutinario, se
it becomes
hace,
routine.
Yes, yes,
it is
algo
like
que hace
a daily
uno.
Thing that one does.
Y pues
and so
así pasa.
That's the way things happen.
Y mi vida
my life,
la he dedicado siempre para
I
los
have
estudiantes.
Dedicated it always to the
me gusta
students.
Tratar,
I like to
escribir,
try to write
componer,
and make compositions.
Yeah. Y pues yo, como les digo,
and so,
lo que yo hago,
as I said, what
es,
I do, what
ustedes.
I write is for all of you.
¿Por qué?
Because
me fascina que alguien se
I really enjoy that someone is interested of the things I do.
So you are now ambassador for the music of the Mexican culture. You are mentor to the next generation, and you are also educator to them as well. You teach at the University of California, Los Angeles. You're in the Department of Ethnomusicology. Could you maybe explain to us what the curriculum is for that department?
Pues, and sí, yo sigo.
Well, I continue to I continue
si se puede decir, carrera,
in another career, if you could say it
dejó.
That way, that that Nati left.
Cuando yo entré con los
when
camperos,
I started with Los Camperos, he had this class in the university.
Y él,
and he
dice,
told me,
Chuy, si yo no tengo tiempo,
look, Chuy, I don't have time. I'm going to give you there in charge of the class.
Y el, pues, o sea, el,
so
la enseñanza
the
de,
teaching
de la cultura
of the
mariachi
culture
in
the university,
sí, ha sido muy importante.
It has been very important.
So you're teaching mariachi in this class. It's a class about the mariachi music?
Yeah.
Okay.
Y les, pues,
and I
hago también enseñanza.
I also un teach un poco de enseñanza a little bit
de lo que es el mariachi,
of what the mariachi is and what the mariachi culture is about.
Lo que es música,
and, sí. also music in itself.
Y los grandes personajes
and all the great famous artists
mariachi.
That have been key in the mariachi
los
world.
Compositores mexicanos,
all
los
the
cantantes,
Mexican composers, all the famous
músicos,
singers, sí. musicians.
No es tanto
that's not so much
académicamente
academically
pero
but,
sí es
but
muy, muy
yes,
importante
it is very important
para la escuela que
for the school
que tengan
that they have
una enseñanza de otras
a teaching from other cultures.
How does your role as a teacher affect the way you play, the way you perform on stage?
Bueno, yo creo que he
well,
mantenido,
I believe I have kept.
He mantenido mi,
I,
mi posición
I have
de
maintained
músico.
My position as a musician.
Pues que antes de ser so, educador,
before I was an educator,
mi pasión
my passion
música, fue,
was the music,
fue,
was.
Mariachi,
to be a mariachi, to be a member, a part of a mariachi group.
And then you started teaching about mariachi, and I just wondered if that helps you when you're playing, because the more you teach something, the more you know even finer details about it, or it changes the way you think about it slightly. I mean, did teaching do that for you?
Siempre. Yo creo que siempre
always,
hay algo,
always, I believe always
hay
there is something to learn
cuando está uno
when
enseñando.
One is teaching.
Right.
Siempre,
all the time.
Siempre está uno
all the time
de
one is trying
algo,
to perfect something
aunque no lo esté
even
con,
though
con su grupo,
we are not, one may not
uno,
be doing it with a group, but one is...
Lo mejor para,
trying to do the best
para estar
so that
mejor,
one can be improving
este, en musicalmente,
in
como,
musically
como,
as,
el, como educador y,
as
como
an
músico.
Educator and as a musician.
One final question. Any other styles of music or any other traditions of music that have impacted your development as a musician or your performance, say, are there any other cultures that you take ideas from? Oh, I really like the way that violinist plays that kind of music and I can use that in mariachi, or I really like the way they sing that. What other cultures are you drawing from? I'm curious.
Nos, tratamos de,
so we try
de,
to
de agarrar de todo,
incorporate from everywhere.
Tanto,
not only
tanto clásico,
classic.
No, no not, digamos rock, pero
not
pop.
Not rock, but pop music from all the different styles
right.
and from all places.
Right. I really want to thank you for your time. I want to thank Carlos Heyer for translating for us today for a lot of that wonderful job there.
No,
and we're really
you.
Looking forward to tonight.
Thank you.
You are listening to Music for Life. I'm your host, Ryan Malone. This is KPCG. Today's episode is titled Music for Nationalism, and we are exploring how nationalism and patriotism have affected fine art music history. Finally, let's have our dessert, where we hear an example from the popular or folk tradition to end the program. I referenced this composer earlier. He's an example of a composer who infused the spirit of nationalism into his music, but he's more from what we'd consider the popular tradition. Because of his influence on the military bands of the United States, we will discuss him more at length in a future episode. But let's have a little patriotic dessert for today's program from John Philip Sousa. This is The Liberty Bell March, written in honor of the return of this national icon to Philadelphia. So not only is this American music written by and intended to be performed by Americans and in a uniquely American style, even the inspiration or subject matter is American. Here is The Liberty Bell March performed by the United States Marine Band. Thank you. You have been listening to Music for Life. From the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus, I'm Ryan Malone. Thanks for joining me.